Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
And that heat index issue is not just a warning. The heat is here. It's already 84 degrees, and it's only 6 minutes after 10 o'clock in the morning. So especially if you're elderly, especially if you're sick in any way, especially if you tend to breathe during the day, be careful out there today. Heat index going over 100 degrees if the predictions are right. Well, the head of the MTA, Elliot Sander, is my first guest to start this week. Topic number one, Mayor Bloomberg keeps reminding us that 1 week from today is the application deadline for up to $500 million in federal funding for a congestion pricing experiment. But some state lawmakers who would have to approve the plan still worry that it would be a regressive commuter tax and that the mass transit system is just not ready for it. So we will ask MTA Chief Lee Sander about that now, and he'll take your calls about the buses and the trains all over the area, that's LIRR and Metro North, as well as the New York City Transit buses and subways. 212-433-WNYC. You can call in right now. That's 212-433-9692. Or you can post a comment on our webpage at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. We already have a few questions coming in there. Mr. Sander, welcome back to WNYC. So nice to have you.
Hi, Brian. Good to talk to you.
Any extra challenges for the buses and subways on a day as hot as this?
Well, we're certainly watching it carefully, and we're hopeful that Con Ed will do its part, and we won't have any problems.
I remember the day where being in the subway would be about the worst, most torturous place to be on a day like this. Now it's where people go for relief because the air conditioning is so consistent.
Yeah, we've just made massive strides in terms of air conditioning, and it's a great thing. It used to be pretty horrible. We've come a long ways since then.
Although the platforms are about as bad as they get anywhere. Do you have any inside information on whether Albany's going to approve congestion pricing on time?
Still unclear. The Senate has indicated that they're likely to come back. Speaker Silver has not made his intentions clear there, and so we're watching to see how it unfolds.
Is it actually your agency, the MTA, that applies for these federal funds? And can you explain to us a little bit better what exactly this is a deadline for?
Sure. We've done that together with the city, and we are applying for funds that USDOT has made available. And they've indicated that were Albany to approve the congestion pricing program, that they would give us $400 to $500 million to help implement the system that would cover our expenditures for express buses and additional services that we would need to take the percentage of people that we would expect to come onto our system.
By the way, why is this a Bush administration priority? This doesn't sound like a Bush administration style thing, you know?
Bush administration views this as a way of providing additional funds to our transportation system, and we're pleased that they are. It's interesting. They have indicated that for whatever reasons, they appreciate the older transportation systems in the United States. And we're happy that that they're doing so.
I was on New York One the other day with Fred Dicker, the New York Post's Albany editor, and he suggested that July 16th is not the real deadline for this application necessarily. Do you know for sure that it is?
Well, when Secretary Peters was up in New York meeting with the governor and Mayor Bloomberg, I participated in that meeting. The secretary indicated that they want to make their announcements publicly for the grants that they'll be making. I think there are 9 cities altogether. We're competing in that pool, and they want to do that by early August so they could present it to Congress and have that done by the beginning of September. So that's how they came up with the July 16th date. Don't know whether that's absolutely in stone and whether they have some flexibility. But if there's any flexibility, it would be a matter of days, and they would have to speak to that rather than me.
So if the legislature and the governor and the mayor were all to come to yes in September or November or next January, you are sure this money would be totally off the table?
That's that's what the secretary told the governor and the mayor when she was up here. And within, certainly if it's not done by roughly the middle of July, the end of July, then we will have lost that money.
The assembly report out today from the legislature says the mayor of London, a big supporter of congestion pricing, and of course they have it there, that the mayor of London says expanded mass transit has to be in place before it takes effect, or as it takes effect, not later. Can you promise that anything would be ready to go on day one?
Yeah, I mean, that's been our plan. We certainly anticipate having the express bus service at the time that congestion pricing will be put in. The city has talked about having the program in place over a period of 18 months, and the plans that I've discussed with Howard Roberts, who runs New York City Transit, is to have that service within that time frame. Obviously, things that would be helpful in the longer term, like the first segment of Second Avenue and computer-based train control that will enable us to have more trains per hour on our existing crowded subway lines, those would happen downstream. But we feel very confident that we would be able to have the express bus service, which is what we would target at most of the increase, ready by then. We're talking about 300 express buses, and we think that's within our range.
300 express buses, so that would be the extent of what would be in effect day one?
Yeah, in addition to that, you know, while there are some subway lines that are at capacity, as Howard Roberts spoke to, not in this context, but, the press certainly focused on that. You know, obviously on lines like Lexington Avenue line, the Queens Boulevard line, the E-Train, you know, those are at capacity, but there are also lines going into the Central Business District that have some capacity, and, that would be fully available within that period of time, too.
Well, what would happen overcrowded lines that Howard Roberts, who you mentioned, the head of the Transit Authority, and for people who don't know the difference, the Transit Authority runs just the buses and subways in New York City. The MTA is the parent organization, and my guest is Lee Sander, the head of the MTA. That includes the buses and the subways in the city, plus the Long Island Railroad and Metro North. And did I leave anything out?
We also have MTA Bridges and Tunnels, which are our toll facilities within the five boroughs, and also we have Long Island Bus.
So you not only run mass transit, but you run like the Triborough Bridge.
That's right. That's right.
All right. Let me play the clip of Mayor Bloomberg when I interviewed him at a Crane's New York breakfast last month, speaking rather dismissively about the issue on the Lex.
Incidentally, I take the Lex most days, and it's not that crowded. So you stand up next to people. Get real. This is New York. What's wrong with that? I mean,
did you cringe when you heard that?
Look, I think the mayor is a hero for his leadership on congestion pricing. While I appreciate that there are some who would be negatively impacted by that, I think we will have a terrific public transportation alternative. And I think the mayor is a hero in terms of going out there and doing it. He has indicated, he's told me privately, and he's expressed publicly his interest in talking about the details. It's not locked in stone. And he's willing to engage with the Assembly, with the Senate, with the governor in terms of the details. In regard to his specific comment about the Lex, clearly the Lex is heavily overcrowded, and that's why we're advancing Second Avenue. And that's why in the congestion pricing plan, the funding includes the second segment for the Second Avenue subway to take it from 63rd Street down to 96th Street up to 125th Street. That's the second segment. The third segment would go down south. And that's why this is so important. While there are certainly specific impacts that will impact on some people negatively, when you look at its benefit to public transport and the fact that if we don't do this, we're looking at possibly having a diminished capital program, not advancing the Second Avenue subway past the first segment, the importance of moving people into public transport in the area of global warming. And, that's why I'm supportive of the program, and I think the mayor's comments have to be put in that context.
You know, it's interesting to me that both the mayor at the breakfast and you just now are really being very straightforward about the revenue aspects of this, that one of the reasons is to generate revenue. So let me play the clip, actually, of Mayor Bloomberg from the breakfast interview where he also said that.
Mm-hmm. We are building a Second Avenue subway. We just had the fourth groundbreaking for a Second Avenue subway, and we don't have the money to finish it. Where do you think the money's going to come from? We have big parts of the city, Queens, Brooklyn, the Bronx, Staten Island, where there's no mass transit. These are taxpayers. These are people who live in the city. We want them to come in by mass transit. They get there a lot quicker. They get there a lot more efficiently, and they wouldn't be polluting there. But somebody's got to provide the mass transit. Where's the money going to come from?
Where's the money going to come from? So do you and the mayor risk raising skepticism about the plan if this sounds like it's for the revenue rather than for the environment or for the health or for the ease of getting around or business growth?
Well, it's both. I would not be as enthusiastic as I am, and the governor is similarly enthusiastic as well. The reason that both of us are supportive of the mayor is because it's multifaceted. We would not be as enthusiastic. We're also not the impact that it has on carbon emissions, the issue of global warming, the issue of how you make New York sustainable. Certainly transit funding is an important one. And certainly when you look at the out years where we're looking at a $1.8 billion deficit, certainly transit funding is important. And if this does not happen, it will create more of a problem for the governor, for the state legislature, for the MTA. But it's not just about transit funding. It's about how you have New York, doing its part in an era of, global warming and having and also accommodating a city that's going to grow by a million more people in the next 25 years. The region's going to grow 3.5 million people in that time frame. If the city does not do this, playing its role in the region, I generally am concerned about how competitive we're going to be with places like London, which is clearly one of our major competitors, and quite frankly, they're ahead of us in this regard.
Would the money go directly into the MTA's coffers, or does it go through the city or state budget or something?
Again, these are all details we worked out in discussions that the governor and I've had with the mayor. Clearly the vast majority of it will be directed to the MTA.
Did you have percentage conversations?
In a very broad way, which I won't go further on, but certainly feel comfortable enough in saying, as the mayor said himself, the vast majority of it going to specifically to the MTA. There are related services like bicycle and ferry services. I think the city wants a small amount for, which accomplishes the same objective, but the vast amount of funding will be dedicated to the MTA.
The ferries, the water taxis, they're not under you.
Correct.
Would funding from the congestion pricing be used in part to avert a fare hike, or would you dedicate it all to the capital projects like the Second Avenue subway?
Well, they're really interchangeable. First, let me say that this would not have an impact on our finances for 2008 and 2009. It would have an impact once it was in place, but it certainly will have an impact on the funding for 2010 out. It is part of Plan 2030, where it's part of the plan. In addition to the congestion pricing revenues, the mayor has included matching funds with the state. And the main reason why we have the deficits that we had, that we've been facing, thankfully been bailed out by the robust real estate market, but we've had these deficits because the city and the state, going back to the year 2000 on the capital side, kind of withdrew their funding, and so the MTAs had to borrow. And those expenditures, directly relate to the fare and our operating expenses. So the bottom line is that whether it's on the capital operating side, it will impact the fare.
Did you say they misconstrued their funding?
Withdrew their funding. Basically, what occurred in terms of the capital program is that historically, when the MTA began its five-year capital programs in 1982, the city and the state each had proportions of roughly 10-15% to pay for cars, stations, depots, signals, and
right. And city money has come out, and state money has come out. So you have to be more self-sufficient.
They were withdrawn in for the 2000 plan, and the MTA then basically, other than the federal money we get from Washington, which is about 30-40%, everything else was just borrowed.
The head of the MTA, Lee Sander, my guest on WNYC. Our lines are jammed. And Harris in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Good morning, Harris. You used to be a train operator?
Yes, for my sins. And I wanted to ask your guest if he knows anything about what can be done or what is going to be done about people holding the doors in Manhattan, because this is what creates the problems with the overcrowding, because people can't get on, and they won't. There's nothing. There's no, for example, platform conductors to stop anybody from mashing themselves onto the trains, stopping the trains from going out of the station. So the trains are held up all the way through Manhattan. I operated the F train many, many, many times. The guy would, when I got to the other end, you know, where did you lose your time? And just list every single solitary stop.
Harris,
in Manhattan,
from
people were holding their doors.
From your perspective on the ground, or I should say under the ground. Well, the F train isn't always under the ground. What's the solution?
In my opinion, to have people on platforms that would, after a certain point, stop the people from trying to get into the trains, and have it so that people could close the doors. You know, the conductor could close the doors and get out of the train. Get the train out of the
right.
station.
Okay, Mr. Sander, what do you think about that solution?
Well, I mean, it's clearly an issue. I know we do that to some extent, and I also see at the Times Square shuttle where we, you know, direct people to different platforms to go to trains, you know, that are available. Something to look at. Certainly, it's an issue. It's also a reflection of how crowded the system is.
Harris, thanks for your call. Here's the first question that was posted on our comments page for you this morning. It says, now that the city is enforcing strict noise restrictions, will the MTA finally fix the bus brakes so they don't painfully screech? It's among the worst noises for the Manhattan pedestrian, writes this listener.
Have not looked at that issue specifically, but a good one. We'll take a look at that as well.
All right. Our lines are full. We'll get to some of your calls for the head of the MTA, Lee Sander. We can also take more comments on our webpage, questions on our webpage. Go to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show, and we'll continue with Lee Sander in just a minute. On WNYC with the head of the MTA, Lee Sander. Mr. Sander, you never know where people are eavesdropping on our conversation. So we talked about London and congestion pricing. Here is Jerry, who says he's calling from London. Hello from this side of the pond, Jerry.
Hello, greetings from London.
Listening on the net, do you have New York roots, or how do you know the show?
Well, I travel a lot, actually, from London to New York on business, and I listen to WNYC when I'm in the States, and also back in London here on the net.
Well, thanks for tuning in. So what's your thought this morning?
Yeah, the whole idea of congestion charging is a sort of one that has brought improvements into London. But, you know, every day as a commuter, I take public transport every day from where I live into the city. And I agree that there has to be a lot of investment made before the congestion charging takes place, because we had this in the UK when suddenly these charges for traveling by car into the city were put in. You know, there was chaos on the subways, on the buses. There was, you know, not enough capacity. And, you know,
has it improved?
It has. I mean, there's some big sort of infrastructure projects that are going on. But, you know, every day, because we've got such an old system, things are breaking down, signalings are breaking down, trains are breaking down. And, you know, you hear on the news, you read on the paper that, you know, there's legal battles all the time between the sort of the London equivalent of the MTA and contractors. And, you know, there's £50 million of legal bills and that kind of thing. So, as an everyday traveller, you kind of feel that you know, you see some improvements, but you also hear that there's a lot of money wasted in sort of bureaucracy and red tape, and it's not, you know, helping you on your everyday commute.
Jerry, thank you for your call. Mr. Sander?
Sure. Well, I think TfL, you know, in general, implementing the congestion pricing program has done a good job, and it was, you know, oriented on with buses, not additional subway service, and that's, you know, something that we have noted. Certainly TfL has its issues. They have an old system, and there are issues in terms of how it's maintained, how they're trying to modernize it. But I think the bottom line is that the system in London has worked well in terms of congestion pricing, and happy to hear that that listener noted that as well. The MTA, like TfL, has major challenges in terms of modernizing the system, making it better for the customer. Brian, as you mentioned, in terms of air conditioning, while not perfect and the platforms are hot, the system is so much better than it was 20 years ago. Of course, couldn't get worse with all the derailments that we had in the mid-80s and having to, withdraw the entire Grumman bus fleet. But it's made major progress, and I think the MTA, and I think I know that the MTA is poised to take it even further with Second Avenue, with some of the improvements on the signal system. But if we don't get the money, if we don't have the political support, then that's not going to happen.
Thanks for your call, Jerry. Good luck out there. And TfL, for those of you who don't know, the acronym is Transport for London. So I guess that's the London equivalent of the MTA.
Apologize for our transportation folks. We talk in acronyms too much.
That's right. As long as it wasn't ROTFL, which is a whole other thing. But let me ask you a question about security. Last week's car bombing attempts in London and Scotland obviously have people on higher alert. Are there plans to install security cameras in all the subway stations, or can you update us on what's going on with respect to that?
Yes, we already have deployed cameras, and we have a major program called ISS that will have massive deployment for cameras in the stations, as well as for our bridge and tunnel facilities, and they're very important from a forensic standpoint. The system is also designed to identify where intruders may be entering the system where they might otherwise not be detected by human beings. And so, we've made significant strides, and we will be doing more. On the other side, it is an open system, and certainly security is a major challenge. One of the things that I'm proud of is that on the commuter rail side, where we're particularly concerned given the bombings in Madrid, in India, that we have significantly ramped up with deployment of our officers on the commuter rails program we call Direct Patrol. Previously, our MTA police, we have responsibility with the MTA police for Long Island Road Metro North. NYPD has the patrolling responsibility for the subways and buses in New York, and we took a lot of our officers out of the cars in terms of them having them on the and are having them on the commuter rails, and I think that's more of a deterrent effect.
What about the cameras? How integral to your prevention strategy is surveillance? There's that front page story in the Times today about the 3,000 surveillance cameras planned for a ring of security in Lower Manhattan. What about the subways?
I mean, it's significant. Our plans for the cameras and where we already have cameras are significant. But at the same time, as we talk, within the security area, is more of a forensic after event, and it was very important in London in terms of identifying the individuals who perpetrated that crime. So it certainly is an important. It certainly is an important piece.
Robert in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC with MTA Chief Lee Sander. Hello, Robert.
Hello.
You're on the air.
Oh, thank you. Hi, Chairman Sanders.
Hi.
Hi there.
It's actually Executive Director and CEO. We have, since the Public Authorities Reform Bill in 2005, we've kind of split the board and CEO functions. But
okay.
Thank you.
That's why I just say the head of the MTA.
Right.
Robert, you're on the air. Hi, go ahead.
Yeah, hello. I'd like to ask you about some of the service in Brooklyn. The subway service is very good where I am. It's the Brighton line is very good, and the bus service is very good. But the problem is Brooklyn has become so congested now. There's a construction boom. There's traffic gridlock. Now, I live a mile from the Brighton subway, mm-hmm. and it takes me sometimes over a half hour just to take the bus to the subway. That's the number 3 line in Brooklyn. I was wondering, is it possible to make some of these streets like Avenue U a one-way because the traffic is so bad and the buses can't get through, or maybe have an alternate, use another avenue? And maybe, can I get one question about the F line, the Culver?
Go ahead.
I know that the Brighton line is going to go through a rehabilitation on the stations. I could take the Culver, but there's no express train on the Culver. Have you ever thought about putting an express because there's a third express rail?
Well, interesting you should mention that. There was a presentation at our board meeting last month and some media coverage of the desire by people who used to take the F Express when it was there to have that reinstituted, and that's something we're taking a look at. Unfortunately, in about a year, we're going to be redoing the Culver Viaduct, and that will make it difficult. There's a request now to see whether in the next year, before that construction takes place, whether we can do that. And we are taking a look at it. Clearly, on the bus side, congestion is a major issue for us. We're looking at trying to create some bus rapid transit corridors where we would have specific bus lanes dedicated to buses so they're not impacted by traffic. And clearly, that's very important in terms of our bus speeds.
Thank you for your call, Bob. You know, we've seen the beginning, as you know, of testing those digital signs in the L trains, saying or on the platforms, really, when the next train will be, like the ones they have in London and Tokyo. But I gather it's still not working. I haven't been on that line in a while. What's the latest with that?
Well, I mean, the reports that I've gotten is that they have been working pretty well. There are two benefits to what we call CBTC, which is what that system is, computer-based train control. One is passenger information, so people know when the train is coming. The second, which is as important, is being able to, instead of running 23, 24 trains an hour, with this computerized system, we think we'll be able to get a 20% increase, which is a big deal when you have 1,000, 2,000 people on a train during rush hour to accommodate 25 to 30 trains an hour will give us the kind of capacity we need so we won't have the overcrowding that we've been talking about earlier in the program. So it's being debugged on the L train. It's supposed to then be implemented. We're supposed to implement it on the 7 train once that's done, and we're very excited in the medium and long term about implementing this system throughout the the entire transit infrastructure. The problem is implementing these systems in an infrastructure that's 100 years old is about, you know, one of the most difficult things you can do in the engineering world, in the operations world. If we were designing, as we are with Second Avenue, when you have a new system, it's much easier to put these kinds of platform edges which would deal with hot platforms or signal, you know, improved signals technology when you're building anew. To do it in a system that was designed at the end of the 19th century is tough.
Here's another question that came in on our website. It says, why is the guideline or rule about exiting buses through the back door so poorly enforced? Requiring people, except maybe the elderly, to exit through the rear door would make buses run much faster. Ever given any thought to that?
I have not looked at that recently. I ran the Manhattan bus system in the 80s. And
oh, you did?
Yeah, I was responsible for that from roughly 1984 to 1988. So I've direct experience in terms of our bus system.
This is one that gets people really ticked off. You know that, right?
Yeah, I've not heard that complaint recently. I did not hear that in the 80s in terms of our drivers not encouraging people to move to the back. Mm-hmm. But I will discuss it with Howard and Joe Smith, who's taken over our bus system, reporting to Howard, and see what we can do about instructing our drivers to do that. More than they have been, sounds like.
How are the MTA's finances? Have you been getting to know the books left by your predecessor, Peter Calico?
Indeed, I have. We will be in the next several weeks, toward the end of July, releasing a financial plan, and so that's one of the things I've been spending a lot of time on.
Because State Controller Alan Hevesy once said they kept two sets of books. Not everybody agrees that was the case, but do you see any evidence of that or any other subpar accounting practices more recently that you're now having to grapple with?
No, and I think that most outside observers have acknowledged that after that occurred, Peter Calico and Katie Lapp put in a very good program, basically copying the city's four or five-year financial plan process, where we go out publicly, as we will, the middle of the year. Then in November, we then make the specific suggestions. So we have a very transparent process, very interactive process with our board, with the public about what our funds are and what we're planning on doing. I think that those issues were addressed after the fact. And as you say, Brian, not everyone agreed that that was the most accurate characterization, but I have not seen anything, nor have I heard anyone Recently say that the MTA has been playing games with its numbers.
Ellen in Harlem, you're on WNYC with Lee Sander, head of the MTA. Hi, Ellen.
Hi. I appreciate the opportunity to say this. It may seem minor, but since Mr. Sander has experience with the buses, maybe he can speak to it. There are much signage where you're supposed to be able to read a timetable next to a bus stop.
Mm-hmm.
There are many places where that timetable box has slipped to the sidewalk, and it's difficult to see the information. I can cite some places.
And so your question is are they on top of maintaining those?
Exactly.
All right.
How do they do it? Does anybody inspect them?
By the way, I've always been amazed in recent years that those schedules seem relatively accurate within a minute or two, in my experience. Do you update them?
We call them guiderized, and actually when I was running the system, it was a contract with the DDOT that had the maintenance responsibility. I don't think our crews actually maintain those. And yes, every season we generally have a new pick, and you have variations based on whether school is on or you have the holiday period.
Mm-hmm.
And
so you go to every bus stop in the city and change the sign?
That's basically how it used to be, and we'll double check that.
And what about the ones falling down?
Yeah, we'll check that out too.
Ellen, did you have one specific location you wanted to throw at him?
I have a couple.
Go ahead, real quick.
Just don't throw them at me.
125th Street and 8th Avenue on the Uptown, and 145th Street on Broadway on the 19 going east. And I believe also, I'm not positive, but I believe also on 125th Street, the Crosstown bus going west, there's a bunch of buses that stop there, and I don't believe there's any guide to ride.
Huh. Okay, that's good to know, because that's a very busy stop.
Mm-hmm. Appreciate that.
Romalo in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Good morning.
And we're running out of time, so get your question in real quick.
First of all, the fleet has been updated to hybrid buses, I've noticed, but I was just wondering when the newer companies that were acquired, like the Green Van Lines, the New York Bus Lines, are going to be updated to hybrids.
They also have, I believe, are in the process of doing that. That's our MTA bus company that we took over from the city. And don't have the exact dates on that, but we are moving aggressively. New York City Transit deserves great credit for moving very green in that direction, but don't have the exact numbers. But we have been getting new buses. The old city bus lines, 8 of them, really had decrepit fleets. And one of the things we're very proud of is how we have gotten new equipment. But there are different variations of technology. You have hybrid buses. You have buses that are diesel but have really reduced emissions, and can't speak this minute in terms of over the next year the different buses we're getting, both express and local, how they divide between hybrid and clean diesel.
30 seconds left. What's the biggest surprise, now that you've been in office a good few months, that you found taking over the whole system?
I wouldn't say, there have been any great surprises. I guess if there's one, I take the system every day and I try and get out to the field to talk with our employees twice a week, and it is the fact that our 66,000 employees, by and large, love their job and enjoy serving the public. And I think that is probably the biggest surprise, and obviously a wonderful surprise to have. And while, as with any organization, you have your 1% who, maybe not, is not the job for them, or be having a bad day or what have you. But the biggest surprise, I would say, is how committed our employees are doing, and overall, I think, doing a fine job.
Lee Sander, head of the MTA, president and CEO, no, executive director and CEO, to be precise. Thanks so much for coming on and answering all our listeners' questions. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up, we will meet one of our local religious leaders, one who doesn't get much media attention, but who is very active throughout New York with what he calls an outreach ministry. We'll talk to the Lutheran bishop of the New York area about diversity in New York, immigration in New York, and more. Stay with us.